Welcome everybody, good morning, and thanks for tuning in for today's talk by Markus Kratrup. Let me quickly introduce him to me. He comes with a very sophisticated biochemistry knowledge from his studies back in Tübingen and Zurich, but then followed a bit of more interest in biomedical research as he did his diploma in the University Hospital of Zurich. This was followed then by a PhD at the Bath University in the Institute of Immunology. And even then, he stayed in the clinics as he went to Charité in Berlin and rehabilitated at the Institute for Biochemistry before then moving back to Switzerland once again to St. Gallen. Where he became the head of the research department of the Kennel Hospital in St. Gallen. And then finally, in 2002, he came to Konstanz, where he became the professor for the chair of immunology. And since then, his research has always interested in the effects of stress on the body, and especially the effects of stress on the immune system, as it is very sensitive to influences of physiological stress. And nowadays, he is primarily working as my boss. But besides that, and as a part of the cluster, we are investigating the crossplay of stress and the effects on the immune system and social behavior, which is, as we all had to learn the hard way, a quite important factor in the prevention of disease contagion. So without further ado, I will hand over to you, Markus, and I'm looking forward to your talk.
Yes, thank you very much, Dennis. Actually, you deserve a lot of credit together with your master's student, Dennis Mink. You will see at the end of the talk. So I will now go into the PowerPoint. I hope this works. The title of my talk is The Influence of Social Stress on T-cell Responses Against Viruses, Tumor Cells, and on Behavior of Mice. And this is a premiere in a way that this is my first talk for the Center of Advanced Study of Collective Behavior, and it is also my first talk online. So I hope this works out. So we are immunologists, and we are studying the immune response of T lymphocytes against viruses. And you may wonder, when the collective behavior initiative was launched and applied for, why would an immunologist be get interested in group behavior? And I wasn't actually so sure when we had in our lab seminar, Annegret Bitzer, who came up with her journal club paper, which was published in Nature in 2016 and said, unexpected role of interferon gamma in regulating neuronal connectivity and social behavior. And this I found fascinating, because the idea that cytokine we work a lot with, interferon gamma, which is a T-cell derived cytokine, which is very inflammatory and fights against viruses, would bias in favor of social interaction. That would mean that the same cytokine, which you need to defend against viruses, which are easily spread among closely interacting groups, would also be a prerequisite for this close interaction. And actually, there were two figure panels where they used interferon gamma knockout mice, so lacking this cytokine. And they had a crude test, which is a mouse, which could investigate or explore an object or a conspecific. And what was seen is that in wild-type mouse with interferon gamma, the interest was high in the other mouse, not so much in the object. But when interferon gamma was knocked out, the interest in the conspecific was lower. And actually, this they showed was due to T cells infiltrating the brain and producing interferon gamma, which triggered GABAergic neurons. And the story is not yet, I think, fully developed, but what they could show is that if they injected interferon gamma into the brain, they could reverse the effect. And I thought, well, this is something I would like to look into. What is here the signal transduction? What are the mechanisms? Do other cytokines do that as well? What happens in a state of virus infection? Is that still the same? And also, is that true in less narrow laboratory devices? And we'll come to this later. So before I go into our systems, I would like to briefly introduce the most important things of the immune system, as you are, immunology might maybe a bit far back for you. The immune cells of the adaptive immune system, which can specifically recognize specific viral or bacterial antigens, are generated in the bone marrow, where there is a stem cell, the hematopoietic stem cell, giving rise to precursors, either of B cells, and they fully mature in the bone marrow. That's why B cell stands for B, like bone marrow. But other precursors go into the thymus here above the heart and give rise to T lymphocytes, and they make the cellular immune response. What is also important to know is that the immune system patrols the whole body for antigens coming in, like the skin, via lymphatic vessel, which end open in the tissue and which drain extracellular fluid into the lymph nodes. And the lymph nodes are reaction vessels where the T cells meet those cells, which they need to get stimulated. And these are dendritic cells. Yeah? The dendritic cells pick up the antigen in the periphery, and they then migrate along the lymphoid vessels to the lymph nodes and mount a reaction. Then there is still the spleen. This is the big lymph node of the blood. And also good to know is that the gut and the airways are very carefully monitored and have lots of lymphoid tissues. Now, the lymphopoiesis, as I just mentioned, starts from a multipotent hematopoietic stem cell. And then you can go in the myeloid lineage or to the right to the lymphoid lineage. And for us now of interest is in the myeloid lineage, the myeloblasts, which give rise to monocytes. These are blood white cells. And then they can, when they migrate into the tissue, differentiate into macrophages, so they eat up pathogens, and into dendritic cells. And these are the ones which migrate to the lymph node to carry the antigen and stimulate the T lymphocytes. Well, and in the lymphoid arm, you see the T lymphocytes of the cellular adaptive immune response and the B lymphocytes, which then differentiate into plasma cells, and they are antibody factories. So they fill up the blood with antibodies. Now, here a closer look. So this is the antigen presenting cell, the dendritic cell, and it can stimulate on the surface both the T helper cells, and they produce cytokines. Yeah, they help the B cells and T killer cells to act, and they have this standard surface marker CD4. And then you have the cytotoxic T cells, they kill infected cells, and by this means prevent the spread of pathogens, and they have the marker CD8. Now, how does that interaction look like? Here you have the dendritic cell on the left and the T cell on the right, and antigen, which is either synthesized in the dendritic cells or taken up from the outside, is fragmented. And these antigen fragments are then transported onto a surface molecule, which is the MHC molecule. And these peptides, these antigen fragments, are seen by the antigen receptor of the T cells. So it sees the surface of MHC and the antigenic peptide coming from a virus or a bacteria. This is the first signal. Then you need a second signal, which is a co-stimulatory molecule, and a third signal where cytokines are secreted and they direct in which direction functionally the T cell should go. And you have receptors for the cytokines on the surface of the T cell. So this is the third signal. First signal, second signal, third signal. Now, briefly, how does that work? How can fragments be generated of antigens in the cell? So the immune system needs to know what is synthesized in each cell of the body. because antibodies cannot see it from the outside of the cell. And so the T cell system developed, they are fragmented. And this fragmentation by a large protease, the proteasome, is actually our core topic in our group. And these peptides or fragments are transported into the endoplasmic reticulum through the TAP transporter, loaded onto this MHC1 to the surface. Yeah? And here the T cell receptor sees the antigenic peptide. This is for cytotoxic CD8 plus T cells. Now, how does it work for T helper cells? There, material taken up from the outside is fragmented in a membrane compartment, the lysoendosome, and is loaded onto another type of MHC molecule called class 2. And that is seen by the antigen receptor of the CD4 plus T helper cells. Now, the immune system is massively influenced by stress hormones. And there are two major ones, and that is the glucocorticoid stress hormones in mice, corticosterone. And they are triggered by the so-called hypothalamus pituitary adrenal gland axis, HPA axis. And when you have experienced stress, then in the hypothalamus, there is triggered the production of a hormone, corticotropin release hormone. And this is then sensed by the pituitary. And the pituitary puts out a hormone which is spread all over the body via the bloodstream, and that's called adrenocorticotropic hormone, ACTH. And that activates the adrenal glands, yeah, the cortex of the adrenal glands producing these glucocorticoid receptor hormones. There's another important line, which I will also talk a bit about, and that's the adrenaline-noradrenaline system. And they are produced by the medulla, and they are also influencing via alpha and beta adrenergic receptors the immune response. Also cytokines, by the way, if you have pro-inflammatory cytokines, they activate production of all this HPA axis. And this is because these glucocorticoid hormones are anti-inflammatory, very potently. Yeah, you know that cortisol is taken if you have like a rash or a problem with autoimmunity. And so this is a very closely connected interaction. Now, the first three brief talks I give you are about published data from our group, showing you what kind of techniques we are using and what we have found in the past. And really, the past work has been mainly on the effect of stress on the individual mouse. Yeah, how does the stress affect the immune response to viruses, but also in humans? And the first story is actually a cooperation with the Department of Psychology, and it's mainly done by Annette Sommershof, who is now the head of the FlowCon, of the flow cytometry unit. Now, the title here says that there is an influence of traumatic stress on the peripheral T cell compartment in a group of patients called PTSD patients. Now, these PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. It's an anxiety disorder which is triggered by traumatic events, yeah, like rape, military combat, torture, and life-threatening events. And it's a major medical problem because soldiers and people in war areas are suffering from this PTSD, like about 30% in the population of Iraq was affected, in Afghanistan, and also veterans in the United States, also the German army. And the symptoms are like re-experiencing, like flashbacks of traumatic events, and avoidance of reminders of this traumatic event, and arousal, emotional arousal, and a continuous stress. Now, what is interesting is that these patients, on the one hand, suffer more from inflammatory diseases. So it seems their immune system is somehow not quite so immune competent, but also at the same time, they suffer from autoimmune diseases where the immune system reacts against the body itself. And this is like an overshooting of the immune response. So that seems to be a complex issue. Now, you can group patients, and they were recruited at the Center for Psychiatry Reichenau, not far away from here. And there were 19 patients with PTSD coming from all over the world, which were treated there. And 14 which were trauma exposed but not fully classified as PTSD, and 13 control individuals. And what is obvious that the number of events of trauma affects whether you become get PTSD or not. So the more adverse events you affect, you experience will enhance the likeliness of developing PTSD, and also the severity of the symptoms. And I'll come back to this in a minute. Now, with humans, obviously, all we can do is draw blood, and then with very many surface markers, categorize T cells, B cells, cells of the immune system, whether they are naive, that means they have never seen their antigen before, or whether they are memories, so they have seen the antigen before, or whether they are acting right now and putting out toxic granules, then they go to effector memory. And with many markers, up to 10, 12 markers, we could look whether PTSD patients have evidence for an altered immune T-cell response. And actually, the number of T cells was not different. Yeah, so you see here the CD3, this is the T cell receptor co-marker, was the same in control and in PTSD. But surprisingly, you had less naive cells in PTSD patients, adults, and you had more T cells which looked like they had experienced their antigen already. And this looks a bit like the immune system of an old person, yeah. Where the older you get, the less naive T cells you have, and the more experienced antigen experience you get. This can be a problem for immune competence. And then we looked whether the central memory cells, these are recirculating through spleen and lymph node, or effector memory, which are patrolling all the body, are more affected, and it seemed both show here some effect. But when we looked, is it now T helper cells which are affected or T killer cells, it was obvious it was the killer effector memory response which was upregulated, or more cells in the PTSD. Then there was also a dosage effect. Yeah? When we looked at people, and this was done in cooperation with Thomas Elbert's group and Iris Colassa, and who were treating these patients, and what they found is that the PTSD, for the full-blown PTSD, has more loss of naive T cells compared to trauma-experienced people, and the opposite was true for the memory T cells. So that was one finding. And the second finding was actually also quite surprising. And this is about a very important T cell, which is a regulatory. It's called regulatory T cells, and they are immunosuppressive. So they make sure that the immune system doesn't overshoot and also doesn't react against your own body in autoimmune diseases. And there are a number of markers you need to use to characterize them. And we found a 50% reduction of regulatory T cells in these PTSD patients in the peripheral blood, which could explain why they experience more problem with autoimmune disease. Yeah, so this was all I wanted to say about PTSD. But I was actually surprised, because these people came from all parts of the world, genetically probably extremely heterogeneous, and to see such effects, significant reproducible effects, was quite amazing. Well, but what you cannot do in humans, you cannot give them an experimental infection, and you can also not access lymph nodes and spleen. And this is very important, because the peripheral blood only reflects a part of what happens in the immune response. So we wanted to have in parallel look at mice. And in mice, we have been using a model which is called social disruption stress. So what happens here is you have four mice which are co-housed, younger mice, and they have a hierarchy. And then 2 hours per day, you put in a fairly aggressive, physically superior male, and this will disturb their social order and attack them. And this exerts a major stress onto these mice. It's a social defeat with that which they are experiencing. And I just have a little video how that looks like. So you see, this is getting actually quite wild, which is actually also a problem of this model, because sometimes they bite. And then we don't know, is the change in immune response due to biting, to wounds, or is it due to stress? So we said, let's not continue with this model. But the data I'm showing you now in the next section is with that model. The disadvantage is that it doesn't work with females. Yeah. So, and it would be also quite important to work with females. That's why we set up another stress model, which also works in females. And it is the problem with this biting. Now, what you can clearly see is in these mice, when they experience 6 days of confrontation for 2 hours per day with this social disruption stress, SDR, that the adrenal mass, yeah, so the mass of the adrenal glands at the kidney is enhanced. And that is that you can measure, weigh. What you also can see is that the thymus mass goes down. Yeah, you see that here, these are five thymuses from control mice and five thymuses from SDR mice. And there's a very significant weight loss because the immature T cells are in the thymus are extremely sensitive to glucocorticoid stress hormones. Now, we wanted to look how is the immune response to viruses affected. And we worked with a virus, which you probably have seen similar images recently. Looks like a bit like corona. But it's actually also an RNA virus. It also has these spikes of glycoprotein. And it's a typical mouse pathogen. It can cause meningitis, but usually the mouse gets a bit fever, gets a very strong cytotoxic T cell response, and then recovers. Yeah? So you see that here, this is the virus titer, goes up exponentially 2 day 4, then the T cell response starts and the virus is kicked out. So the mouse survives that easily. Now, here you see the kinetic of the T cell response. Yeah, it starts only late in day 4, and then on day 8, it peaks. And here the virus is already gone, and without antigen, the T cells go into apoptosis and die. And there are some T cells remaining as memory T cells. Now, the reason why this comes so late is because you have a very few T cells, maybe 5 or 3, which have to expand by a factor of 10,000 and more. And the cell division takes time until you have enough cells to kill infected cells and prevent the virus replication. That's the disadvantage of the adaptive immune response. It takes time to mount. Aha, and what I wanted to show you, these are the fragments, the peptides, which are seen by the T cells when a mouse is infected with this LCMV virus. Yeah, it's a glycoprotein here, you see here, yeah, with 3 peptides named according to their position, 33, 276. And a nucleoprotein, another major structural protein, also has 1 or 2 interesting peptides presented in black mice, black 6 mice. Now, when we first started, we said, okay, let's infect when we start the stress procedure. And that had virtually no effect. So mice are then sensitive when they have experienced chronic for 6 days stress, and then you come with an infection. Because that's the setup here. You see that in blue, the stress mice mount a much worse T-cell response against all these peptides. So that had a clear functional impact. Yeah? So stress really impedes your antiviral response. What you also see in this model is really amazing. You see an enormous expansion of the cytotoxic CD8 plus cells. Yeah, from day 4 over day 6 to day 8, you get an increase of 5-fold. Yeah, this is in the lymph node number of CD8 cells. So you have get a complete reorientation of cells in the lymph node. And this expansion is not really happening to the same extent in the stressed mice. Yeah? You see on day 6, you already see a significant reduction. On day 8, this is really almost half. So also from that is perspective. And we were wondering what stress hormones are in charge. And we used inhibitors, also that you can do mainly in mice or animals, experimental animals. And this is an inhibitor called RU486, which is a corticosteroid receptor inhibitor. And you see that the expansion of the CD8 cells, if you inhibit with this corticosterone inhibitor, then the shrinkage of the CD8 response is not seen. So it is entirely dependent on the corticosteroid glucocorticoid system. Whereas adrenal do not affect adrenergic hormones. If you block them with an inhibitor of the beta-adrenergic receptor, nadolol, there you don't see any effect. Yeah? So it's clearly glucocorticoid hormones. Maybe we can jump, leave that out, and now go to the cytokine secretion and activation. Here you see an activation marker, CD69 on the surface of activated T cell that is downregulated, and you see less production of interferon gamma, potentially affecting group behavior, and also IL-2. Now, this is the summary here. I show you that upon viral infection in stressed mice, you have less cytokine production and less expansion. The last story, published 2017, is about vaccination. Now, right now, tumor vaccination is a big hype in oncology. And we were interested in a project funded by the German Cancer Aid, whether stress would affect the success of immunotherapy against cancer. So T cells can recognize cancer cells specifically. And what we are using are these balls. They are biodegradable microspheres. It's about 1 micrometer in size. And they are very nicely taken up by dendritic cells if you inject the microspheres into the skin. And there, antigen can be encapsulated. We produce these by spray drying. Dennis does, and Julia and others, and Annette did. And what you see here is antigens and immune stimulants. Yeah, and the immune stimulants cause the dendritic cells to mature and migrate to the lymph node. And the antigens in yellow are presented on MHC on the surface to stimulate the T cells. So the dendritic cells grab them and walk with them into the lymph node. And there, they activate the cytotoxic T cells and T helper cells. And they go out all over the body, look for cancer cells, and kill them. This is actually from a review by Julia Körner and Dennis Horvath and myself. Now, the question is, does that affect the potency of an anti-tumor response? And yes, stress does affect that. Yeah? So we could show, if we first stress the mice, and then this is a prophylactic setting, as if you are vaccinating against a tumor which may come later. This is not a very clinically relevant situation. Usually people come to the oncologist when they have a tumor and need treatment. That's the therapeutic setting. But in the prophylactic setting, we first vaccinate and then we inject melanoma cells. And we eject these microspheres with tumor antigen. And we see that the mice die from this. And if we treat them with these microspheres, with this anti-tumor vaccine, they all survive. However, if we do the same to stressed mice here in orange, they are resistant to therapy. Yeah, so the immune response is not strong enough against the tumor because the stress suppresses the immune response. And the same thing we see also with the therapeutic setting where we first do the stress procedure, then come with the melanoma, the tumor grows, and once we can feel or image in whole body imaging the tumor, then we come with the therapeutic microspheres and we see survival, but not in the stressed mice. Here you see that the T cells responsive to this tumor vaccination after the stress procedure, that they expand less. Yeah, so here in black bars is the stressed mice, also not only to virus infection, but also to the response to vaccination is weaker. And we see that they also kill less. Yeah, the T cells in the stressed mice kill less. We do that by injecting colored cells and then look at their expansion. And you can see that, the colored cells, they bear the tumor antigen or not. So we have two concentration of dyes. These are the tumor cells. And these are the control cells. You inject them into the mouse, and then after vaccination, the anti-tumor response will kill those cells which look like tumor cells. That's in the control, whereas in the stressed mice, this is reduced. So these things we can do, and we can also look what is the cause of a lack of expansion. Is it maybe because the antigens, tumor antigens, are not presented as well? And this is actually what we found in this vaccination model. So when we transfer T cells specific for the tumor into the mice, we could see that they expanded less in the control, less in the stressed mice than in the control. So that means in the environment of the stressed mouse, the dendritic cells don't do their job well to present the tumor antigens and activate the T cells. So here, not only the T cells are affected, but the antigen presenting site. Yeah, and this we could see here also with with a fluorescent dye, T cells injected. They usually proliferate, and with every cell division, you have half of the dye in the cells. And you can see that here, this is naive cells which have not been vaccinated. Then you have here the T cells which divide, so they lose over time their dye because they divide. And in the stressed mice, this is much less. Actually, what we could also see is that the migration of the dendritic cells from the periphery into the lymph node is affected because cells bearing fluorescent microspheres, which we can monitor in the lymph node when they arrive there, there are less dendritic cells with these fluorescent microspheres arriving than in control mice. Yeah, and with this, I'm at the end of my talk, and I'm happy to take questions.
I was wondering, you mentioned the sensitivity of the glucocorticoid receptor and that it changes after those treatments and stress procedures. And you also mentioned, I guess, Thomas Engler group. They have previously, as far as I know, also investigated methylation patterns in receptors for the glucocorticoid receptor and also for proopium melanocorticotene, for example, which produces the ACTH. Do you plan to also mechanistically follow up on whether this also applies in the immune cells in this setting, maybe?
I mean, sure, this would be very attractive. We don't have the methodology set up, but there's actually some people doing epigenetics coming to the University of Konstanz, and this would actually be an opportunity. I agree, this would be really interesting to see how does the stress physiology manifest in desensitization. That's a very nice, attractive idea. I think it's not so simple, but with help of Harald Engler, maybe we can do it. Yeah.
Marcus, do you know, yes, has any of this research been done with other species? I apologize if I have missed it, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, there are other stress models, yeah, that's for sure. I mean, Damien Farine is investigating, they are investigating the birds and then fish, yeah. I mean, there are many models, stress models, actually.
And has anything of that been used for, I know there are studies on like animal welfare of experimental animals. Is there, would you say anything of that is applicable to that?
What do you mean by animal? I don't get the question.
Sorry. Yeah, exactly. For example, at the University of Zurich, there's been some research being done on how the behavior of experimental animals indicate their stress level or their pain level, and that behavior can be used as an indicator whether one has to adapt the experiments in tame.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, we are not doing these experiments, but we do have when you infect with influenza virus, for example, you can see disease severity, yeah, and then you observe the mice, and their posture, the way they run around, the way the fur looks, these are important parameters for judging about how they are doing, yeah, health wise. And how is their well-being, and this is, we use that, yeah, as a readout. This is common, yeah.
Mm-hmm.